Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, Managing Editor for Neurology Live. In this episode, we sat down with a guest you may remember from episode 20, Dr. Raman Malhotra, an associate professor of neurology at Washington University in St. Louis and the current president of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. He joined us to talk about the AASM's recently published position statement that called for a greater emphasis on sleep health in education, clinical practice, inpatient and long-term care, public health promotion, and the workplace because of sleep's critical role in overall health, among another of other topics related to the state of sleep medicine. Let's dive in.
Raman Malhotra, professor of neurology at Washington University in St. Louis. You know, awareness of the value of sleep has definitely been increasing amongst clinicians and patients and the world, but we still feel that there needs to be greater emphasis on sleep health in our clinical encounters as well as in public safety. And so we felt that it was important as the Academy of Sleep Medicine to bring this message to our colleagues about the importance of sleep and what we've learned throughout the years of research of how it really is vital and essential for health. We feel it's as important as nutrition and regular exercise for our health and well-being. We feel it's a biological necessity, and we feel that insufficient sleep and untreated sleep disorders if you have those, they're detrimental to your health and public safety as well.
And how would you describe, I would be curious to know, obviously there's been a ton of, I don't want to say studies, but there's been a lot of sort of chatter in the sleep health space about the impact that obviously the pandemic has had on people's sleep and sleep patterns, with everyone kind of adjusting to this virtual world and now sort of slowly making their way back to normal. Did that have any impact on sort of the timing of this and sort of why this kind of serves as that reminder to both the clinical and patient community as to how important sleep is just across the board for everyone's health?
We've always felt that sleep is essential for health. Those are mission and vision, even prior to the pandemic. But you are definitely correct in stating that the pandemic changed a lot of our thoughts and really highlighted the importance of health in many respects, and sleep is part of that. Probably a couple of the obvious issues with the pandemic was how stress and fears caused poor sleep in a lot of our patients in our society. And we all saw how that could impact us in our health. And then honestly, sometimes the flexibility of some of the things that the pandemic brought, for example, virtual school and virtual remote working, where you would be able to cut out your commute time and have a little bit more flexibility. Some of our patients that we see in clinic actually felt like that showed the importance of being able to get more sleep. And they've actually felt better because of having that flexibility of being able to work from home. And then as we move on to normalcy of going back to work or back to school, they still want to value that time that they got as far as getting adequate sleep.
Yeah, kind of a almost like a weird pro-con situation working out there. In your opinion, what's sort of the state of, obviously patient education is a whole different animal, we can get to that in a minute, but in terms of provider knowledge, particularly in the neurology space, obviously, again, sleep, it's essential just across the board. And I would imagine, some physicians in some areas, some specialties might focus on it a little bit more than others just by nature of whatever it is they're treating. But what do you think the sort of general state of provider knowledge on sleep treatment and the status of sleep for their patients is? Do you think that it's inquired enough about? Do you think that we do need more education for sort of physicians across the board?
You know, study after study, every time we look at that, even amongst neurologists, but definitely other specialties or primary care specialties or primary care providers, we continue to see a lack of awareness or lack of inquiring about sleep disorders in their patients. We're definitely making some improvement. And I understand the challenges when you're evaluating a patient for a neurological condition and having time to ask about everything. But we do feel that it is essential, especially for patients with neurological conditions, to ask about their sleep. And it does start, like you said, with education of our medical students and our residents and our fellows. And there's very little time dedicated in most programs to sleep medicine. And we're continuing to try to make that better and try to improve on that by incorporating this into different aspects of the curriculum.
And what specifically, I guess, when we're talking about sort of those gaps in knowledge and in care, perhaps, for you, are there any that sort of that stand out as like glaring? These definitely need to be addressed in the short term. And then on the other side of that, are there any that you think are definitely issues we need to address, but perhaps we're working on it and it's kind of a long-term goal for the ASM and just for sleep care as a whole?
Yeah. You know, I think one of the glaring concerns we have is the insufficient sleep and not getting enough sleep in both adults and unfortunately in our children. The teens seem to be the highest. We have studies showing that almost 3/4 of teens aren't getting enough sleep. And we can only imagine what that can do to the developing brain and to if they do suffer from neurological disorders like headaches or other developmental disorders, how that could impact them. And to be honest, sometimes even it's impossible for them to get enough sleep because of how their schedules are set and what the expectations are as far as getting to school at a certain time. And so that is one group, but even adults and even as medical providers, us serving as examples, sometimes our schedules are not conducive to allowing us to get at least 7 hours of sleep. And so I still think that that is a great thing to start with, that I think just like asking your patients to try to get more exercise or eat healthy, asking them to get enough sleep can go a long way in keeping them healthy.
And then that, I guess, kind of lends itself a little bit to patient education. I would imagine, obviously, most adult patients, you know, whether they're being treated for a sleep disorder or just in general at the doctor, you know, I would imagine most adult patients probably understand at a baseline that sleep is essential and important. But do you think that patients are educated enough on sort of the negative impacts that not getting enough sleep and not, you know, having good sleep can have on their health just overall? And then again, you know, I know you sort of mentioned the challenges with younger, particularly teenage patients. But where do you think the starting point is to address some of those patient education challenges? I mean, I would imagine a lot of it falls on the provider, but are there enough sort of programs out there and awareness programs that can help patients sort of really understand this at a younger age, how important sleep is as they continue to grow and become adults?
Yeah, I know. I think that's the key is that we need to start off young. It's hard to change behaviors or impressions about your health when it's already reached maybe mid to late adulthood, although we still try. But really starting off even at school-age children and incorporating importance of sleep to health in the curriculum. We have on our website, sleepeducation.org, some excellent learning examples of how to incorporate that into curriculum for elementary school students, middle school students, high school students, and even college students. And so we feel that just like we promote other healthy aspects of nutrition and exercise, sleep should be part of that. And I think that will go a long way as kids understand how important that is for their health to include those. I think kids want to be healthy. Their parents want them to be healthy. And so I do think that actually having that in the curriculum would be important to get that out. And I think we're not doing a very good job of that.
Hey, everybody, me again. We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Malhotra to introduce a new segment of the show that we're calling the Neurology News Minute. In it, we're going to take a quick pause from our expert interviews to offer you an update on some of the latest news and developments in neurology. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. The NIH has awarded a grant to NeuroPace that's going to fund an IED study to evaluate the safety and use of its responsive neurostimulation, or RNS, system in the treatment of patients with Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. Funded through the NIH's BRAIN initiative, a total of $9.3 million will be allocated over a period of 5 years. In addition to exploring brain-responsive neuromodulation technology as a new therapy for those with LGS, individualized therapy might also be optimized as a result of the continual monitoring and recording of brain activity through NeuroPace's RNS system. Next, the acting commissioner of the FDA, Dr. Janet Woodcock, has announced that she's requesting an independent review and assessment of the interactions between representatives of Biogen and the agency during the process that led to the approval of the company's controversial Alzheimer's disease treatment, aducanumab, or as you may know it, Aduhelm, to be conducted by the Office of the Inspector General of the Department of Health and Human Services. Woodcock made the announcement in a thread of tweets, writing that we believe an independent assessment is the best manner in which to determine whether any interactions that occurred between the manufacturer and the agency's review staff were inconsistent with the FDA's policies and procedures. We believe this review and assessment will help ensure continued confidence in the integrity of FDA's regulatory processes and decision-making. This news came on the heels of several weeks of heightened controversy following the drug's approval. And finally, a newly proposed inventory tool for predicting sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, or SUDEP, has been shown in a small study to demonstrate better prediction ability and highlight the limitations of the currently utilized SUDEP-7 inventory. The novel tool includes weighted scoring for three items: generalized tonic-clonic seizures occurring within the last year, the occurrence of any seizures within the last year, and the presence of intellectual disability, which can result in a total score from 0 to 4. Notably, for each additional point gained on the SUDEP-3, the odds of SUDEP increase by 180% compared to the point per odds increase of 40% associated with the SUDEP-7. For more insight, you can check out our interviews with two of the study authors, Dr. Michael Sperling and Dr. Myromi Ney. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding links in the show notes. And now, back to Dr. Malhotra.
And now, I know the ASM's Sleep is Essential position statement mentioned the Healthy People 2030 initiative program. I'm not really sure which word best describes that. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and the ASM's involvement in it, and just sort of what the clinical community should know just about it and how they might be able to get involved in it?
Yeah, different departments on the federal level have come up with different metrics on how to give goals for our populations to become more healthy. Again, targeting things like heart health and exercise and nutrition. They've fortunately included sleep as well and realized that this issue of not getting enough sleep or even suffering from sleep disorders is definitely an epidemic in our country. And so not only in Healthy Sleep 2020, but the 2030 metrics, sleep is going to be something that our government's going to want to set as a goal to improve and to track throughout the years to hopefully show that we're kind of moving the ball forward in regards to getting healthy sleep for our population.
And do you think that's a positive? I mean, I would imagine that, you know, that that's viewed as generally a good thing, that at least on a federal level, you know, there is, you know, I don't want to say finally, but there is some recognition about the importance of this as, like you alluded to, you know, among these major sort of health talking points we've talked about over the last decade of heart health and obesity, things like that. I mean, is that kind of a, for you, what does that mark a turning point in sort of the public's view of sleep?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think we all recognize some of the major health issues that our country is facing, whether it is obesity or heart health, stroke, dementia. And it's very important to see how sleep plays a role in those. There's obviously other things that need to be looked into as well, but it is a major landmark that the federal government, multiple medical societies who also supported this statement, recognize that sleep is part of that solution, and not recognizing or treating that underlying sleep disorder or insufficient sleep is, we're not going to be able to accomplish our goal of a healthy population without recognizing that.
Absolutely. Last thing I want to ask you, and of course, feel free to add, you know, anything that you think is important to mention that maybe I didn't ask about, or you just, you know, think is important to talk about. But I'm curious, you know, we've touched on a couple times throughout this conversation just about the effects that poor sleep and sleep disorders can have on other, you know, comorbid conditions and vice versa. When it comes to neurology specifically and neurological disorders, do you find that the research is where it needs to be, or are we kind of still in the infancy of understanding really the impacts that poor sleep health and poor sleep hygiene can have on these other disorders?
Yeah, you know, I think we've made tremendous strides in understanding the role sleep plays in some of our neurological disorders, though I think we're still probably in its infancy. And it's really unbelievable. Some of the major things that we learn about the role of sleep, for example, in dementia. And, you know, we obviously are learning a lot about dementia from a lot of different angles, but we now know that not only is sleep important for someone who has dementia in regards to letting them function better, but it can not only slow progression of, for instance, their Alzheimer's disease, may even play a role in the onset or the presentation of it. And so maybe the sleep that someone's getting in their young to mid-adulthood will eventually impact brain health decades later. And so I think that that's eye-opening, to say the least. But I think we're still learning why, and like you mentioned, what interventions can we do besides just saying get enough sleep, that's going to be important to preserve that brain health.
Absolutely. I do have one more follow-up question. I apologize. It's just popped in my head. In terms of the, you know, I know you've mentioned sort of a number of steps forward we've made in research and development over the last couple of years. But for you, what are you kind of keeping your eye on right now, whether it's something that just recently came into sort of regular clinical practice or is making its way toward that? What's kind of the next quote unquote big thing that you've got your eye on as it relates to sleep disorders?
You know, I think one thing we've continued to struggle with when we see patients in our sleep clinic is how do we measure someone's sleep? Because when we bring them into the lab, we know we're altering their normal environment, and it's just one night of many. And it's hard to believe that that really represents their true sleep, you know, what state they're in. And so I think the next thing is really in getting multiple nights of really good data at home, hopefully cost effectively, with really not many sensors and maybe something that's non-invasive. So I think we're technology is getting to the point where we'll be able to measure people's quality of sleep at home, how long they're sleeping, how deep they're sleeping, hopefully relatively easily and safely. And I think that that could be groundbreaking as we try to learn more about how sleep impacts health.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like there's a couple, you know, devices that are kind of making their way through. I know there's a headband company based in France that they have something like that going on. It would be interesting to see, 5-10 years down the line where that technology is at and how often and widespread its use is. So, all right. Is there anything else you want to add? Anything you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, one other thing I didn't cover was we talked about, you know, sleep education and sleep in the clinical setting, but one other thing our statement reports on is the importance of sleep in the hospital setting and in the rehabilitation setting. And a lot of our neurologists will see patients in the hospital acutely after an injury. And we all know how horrible sleep can be in the hospital. But one part of this statement was to make sure that the hospital systems prioritize the importance of sleep for that brain that's recovering from an injury. And then as they transition to maybe a facility afterwards, which a lot of our patients do, following that up again with the importance of that patient getting enough sleep as that brain's healing. And I think that hopefully that's something we can implement relatively easily, but we think could have a huge impact on how well our patients do.
Yeah, I would imagine a standardization of that portion. I mean, really, that's part of the rehab process. So standardization of that. I mean, does that exist or is that something that sort of needs to be implemented?
Yeah, there are far and few between, but there are hospital systems and certain facilities that really prioritize sleep and make sure that staff and patients are aware of kind of certain rules of when to check for things in the middle of the night and making sure people are quiet and that the lighting is appropriate and the noise levels are appropriate. And so I think it is existing. They're actually relatively easy things to implement. It's just a matter of someone bringing it to the attention. But we do feel that there's data suggesting that patients do better when they are able to sleep more comfortably and in a quiet environment after suffering a neurological disease.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.